everyone. Welcome to Inside the Chrysalis. So our goal for this podcast is to introduce and discuss psychological concepts in the context of the real world. And this is season two. We are a little bit behind schedule. We had hoped to have this out in May, but obviously that didn't happen. It's been a big year, I think, for everyone. We will talk a little bit more about that in a second. For now, let's just get to our introductions. So I'm going to start with a couple of very familiar people. Jen, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I am Dr. Jennifer Bryan. I'm an assistant professor at Baylor College of Medicine, and I'm in mental health education at the VA.
Welcome, Jen. And we also have Chelsea. Chelsea, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Dr. Chelsea Young. I'm an assistant professor at Rowan University, and I study alcohol use in college student populations.
Great. Welcome back, Chelsea. And so we have also a sort of newcomer that you might recognize from season one, episode 13, Live Your Own Timeline, Dr. Zach Baker. Zach, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Zach Baker. I'm the Robert L. Kane Postdoctoral Fellow at the University of Minnesota, and my research is largely around the area of dementia care.
Welcome, Zach. Glad to have you for this season. So I'm Michelle Quist-Ryder, and I'm your host for this podcast. So hopefully you remember me from last season. When I started this podcast last year, you might recall, I was a teaching professor at Penn State. At the end of the season, I started a new position as program director at the American Psychological Foundation, and I was working both jobs. And that turned out to be a little bit time-consuming. So on top of that and everything else, this podcast got delayed a little bit. But now I am solely with APF, and I have a little bit of breathing room. So we're just going to get this podcast going. All right. Woo! Everybody excited?
Yeah.
All right. So when we started season one, we talked a lot about the pandemic. And now here we are in season two, 15, 18 months later, and we are still dealing with the pandemic. So that's kind of what I want to talk about today. One of these topics or one of these aspects of the pandemic that is plaguing a lot of people, pandemic habits, and specifically bad pandemic habits and things that we want to change. Today, we're going to have one of our roundtable episodes, and we're going to discuss these bad pandemic habits and how we can engage in behavioral change. So let's start out by just talking a little bit about the pandemic. So team, how has the pandemic treated you? Have you picked up any good or bad habits? Jen, why don't you start?
Yeah. So I think I developed some good habits. I work from home, so I never leave my house. So I had to come up with reasons to leave my house. I got really used to going on walks every day and just calling a random friend and catching up, getting fresh air and enjoying being out of the house. And then also I got really into interior design since I am at home all the time. Most of the design styles don't really match how I like. So when you go to the store, most of the time it's like rustic farmhouse. I don't want to live in a farm. So I have been creating things that work for me and just really embracing my authentic self. So I think that has been pretty fun.
I totally have gotten into interior design as well. I mean, not officially, I'm not like an expert or anything, but like we've been house hunting and I have found some designs I really like and I start reading all these articles that I never would have read before. So yeah, I totally get that. What about bad habits? Have you developed any bad habits?
Maybe. So because I've been walking so much more, there's a little bit more room in my calorie budget. So we have been going out and trying different dessert places all over the city. Probably my dessert consumption has gone up.
You know, I've noticed something like that too when it, I think because we've been at home and have fewer things to like focus on, we've been trying a lot of different kinds of places and different kinds of foods too. And sometimes it's ordering in, but sometimes it's just like cooking new things, which I feel like is maybe a good and a bad habit in that we're cooking new things, which is expanding our repertoire and it's really great. And but at the on the other hand, it is, you know, more calories and maybe put on some of those, what are they calling it, the pandemic 15 or pandemic 20 or whatever. So I think that is definitely one of those habits that has plagued some people. What about you, Chelsea? Have you developed any good or bad habits during the pandemic?
Some good habits. I read more, so enjoyable reading for fun. I make sure that I do that every single day, no excuse now. And that's been really good. I also bought a house during the pandemic, so I'm getting into having a yard. I mow my lawn and I weed eat and the whole nine. So that's been a nice hobby, I guess, taking care of the house that I now own. But some bad habits, online shopping. Oh man. It's just so easy to buy things online and then, oh, it doesn't work out. Well, I can just ship them easily back. So
Yes. I found that my clothes buying went down because I wasn't wearing clothes out to places like I was before, you know, where we're all wearing the Zoom outfits with like the sweatpants and the nice blouse on top or something like that. So I wasn't buying as many clothes, but we also moved into a new house over the pandemic. So like all of the house things and the yard things and that kind of stuff I've noticed has, it's just so easy to sit at home and browse the shopping sites and all of those things. Definitely. Yeah, I've seen that. What about you, Zach? Good or bad habits?
I would say my biggest habit is my home gym. I really enjoy now building and using my home gym. And so like health, you know, that's good and everything, but it also comes with not irregular injuries and also a lot of buying stuff. So I would say that one hits both ends. And then my other one would be that I have a pretty young baby still who now is in daycare. So I've made a pretty significant habit of being sick periodically.
yeah, that's not great. So we've got some good habits, some bad habits. I feel like I've seen a lot of news stories about pandemic habits too. Do you guys feel that as well, that we've seen things about the pandemic 15 or people even maybe getting into the habit of cooking things at home or buying things or some of these things that we're experiencing? So I don't think this is unique to just us four. I feel like this is kind of a universal thing. So let me ask you this question. What is so special about a pandemic that lends itself to developing bad habits? Because we've had this period of time, this 18 months, 20 months, whatever we're going on now, that we've been in this pandemic and we've seen this increase of good and bad habits or just behavioral change, really. So why are we seeing that over the course of a pandemic? What do you think?
I think like our habits were just totally disrupted basically overnight. So if you were on autopilot, like after work, you would go to the gym and then go to the grocery store and come home and cook, like that whole habit of leaving work, everything that follows it, you kind of lost that. So just your time got restructured in a way that you couldn't plan for, really.
Right. So your routines are just totally disrupted. Mm-hmm. So whatever habits you had before, now they're kind of blown out of the water because our whole life, like you said, got rearranged.
Another one I've been thinking about a lot is stress. I mean, both really significant stressors. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only person here who has gotten a call about somebody you know or a friend of a friend who is suddenly in the hospital, and then, you know, pretty high level stress for the next couple of weeks, or traveling with a baby is pretty scary. But also the constant low-lying background stress of things are different and a lot of things are harder and there's not really an end in sight, I think is a pretty significant stressor that can very easily lead to some bad habits.
Yeah, I think so too. I think stress was kind of my answer to that question as well. We've got this very significant source of stress happening all of the time. And I think part of it is that it's just omnipresent. Everywhere you go, every situation you have, every interaction you have, it's all informed by living in this pandemic stress situation, whether it's because you're on Zoom, because you can't go into the office, or you can't go out and see your friends, or you can't go to the grocery store without a mask, or like it feels like it has invaded every aspect of our life. And so having so much change on so many different fronts just introduces this amount of stress. And so I feel like when we have this amount of stress, we like seek maybe even comforting behaviors or some other kind of behavior that is maybe not optimal, right? So eating more calories or giving up exercising, although it sounds like Zach like got into exercising. I wish I'd taken up that as a pandemic habit, but yeah, that kind of thing. What about you, Chelsea? What do you think?
So my partner lost his job during the pandemic. That was definitely a stressor. I know that's a common experience. A lot of people lost their jobs during the pandemic. Losing loved ones, moving, the feeling of everything being so uncertain, and the fear and the unknowing. And I think some of that leads to changing habits because we want to feel as though we exert control over some aspect of our lives. And so by making these kinds of choices, that makes the world feel a little more controllable, a little more predictable, and so makes us feel a little more secure, even when times are especially uncertain.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. This thought about needing to exert some kind of control or have control over these sort of uncertain times. I feel like maybe the political atmosphere has contributed to this feeling of uncertainty as well. Like even just having so many conflicting viewpoints about what we should do and what is acceptable, what's socially acceptable versus politically acceptable versus medically necessary, all of these things. There's so much strife about all of it that contributes to the amount of stress and maybe even the feelings of isolation, which could contribute to developing these habits almost as a self-soothing kind of thing.
Definitely. I think of how many conversations that I've had that have been just very emotionally fraught because people are making different choices than I am and nobody seems to approve of each other's choices. And so navigating things like holidays and travel and going out can be difficult now when they used to be just easy and taken for granted.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's been a really difficult year to be a scientist, or a past 16 months of being a scientist. And
I would agree with that. Being a scientist has been difficult because you see how much sentiment there is that our work is useless or that unethical even. I think that's the one that gets me the most is when people talk about scientists working with an agenda or that there's some kind of end that they're looking for and they're you know messing with the stats to make that happen, and it attacks the core of what we do of trying to find truth and find answers. So yeah, I think that has been a level of stress as well.
Yeah, I imagine there's something unique about Jen and her job too, because I don't very often see myself on this end of pandemic arguments, but I can remember when the pandemic was first hitting, we were going to come down to Houston and have a baby shower because Jen was still pregnant at the time. And sorry, my wife's name is also Jen. And Jen Bryan was going to host it for us. And we were talking early in that period, and she was like, I don't think it's a good idea for people to come down here. I'm not comfortable with having people over the house and hosting them. And like, this was before lockdowns and stuff. And we're like, oh, come on. Jen's being way over the top about this. But reflecting on it now, I feel like I can get a little bit of empathy that maybe I don't usually have for those who are questioning things. I'm not saying I agree with those opinions, but like, I can understand it a little better because I was closer to in their shoes.
So I want to expand on that a little bit to make sure I understand. What you're saying is that you feel like Jen had more of a bird's eye view because of her experience with the VA and her exposure to what was happening with the pandemic, that she kind of understood a little bit sooner than you about how serious it actually was. And so when she was saying how she didn't feel comfortable with people coming, that realization hadn't necessarily hit the rest of us yet. And so you have maybe some sympathy for people who are a few steps removed from either the science or the reality of what's going on and are therefore questioning it than you would have otherwise. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, I think I was saying both that and the fact that Jen's job employing so much education about health-related information puts her in a particularly difficult place. I think Jen often tries to help people understand things and comes from a place where she is informed to a depth that a lot of other people aren't. And I imagine when people aren't listening to folks in the context of healthcare, that is an even more challenging job.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but I definitely can see that. What do you think, Jen? Do you see that on your end?
Absolutely. I understand that I am, like, my PhD is in psychology, but I work with interprofessional people. So I work with medical doctors, infectious disease doctors. Early in the pandemic, I got images of my coworkers working with COVID patients, doing studies to see what the best treatments were in like the full garb. And it just really like rocked me. So I have these coworkers that I really value doing studies to see what the best treatment is. But yeah, it's been different. One of my best friends is actually director of infectious disease at a hospital chain, and just hearing her every day, what she's dealing with, it's a different perspective when people say like, oh, there's not even a line at the hospital. You can just go to the hospital and it's fine. But in actuality, people who have cancer are delaying their treatments because they're scared to go to the hospital to get COVID. And So yeah, it's been definitely been a different perspective being so close to the hospital in this.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I feel like that's another kind of few layers of stress here. One, for the people who are in Jen's position, who have this really close up view of what's going on, and then, you know, superimposing that over people who don't really see that. And then to Zach's point, who maybe don't even have the ability to have that perspective. And that contributes to the conflict and this sense of not everybody being on the same page, which of course is then more social stress. And so there's really just a lot going on. So we're going to talk to Chelsea about behavioral change, bring it back to some of these habits and how we can change these. Before we do that, though, I do want to touch on one thing. I kind of heard us talking about when we were talking about good and bad habits, and Chelsea talked about getting back to reading. Jen talked about getting back to walking and talking to people on the phone. Zach talked about really getting into the gym and fitness. And I just want to ask this question. Do you feel like when we've been in the pandemic and we've been kind of sequestered in our own homes and maybe kind of spent more time in our own company, do you think this has fostered a sense of finding things that authentically make us happy more than it has at other times?
So I have been thinking about this a lot. I read The Economist a lot. And one of the things it was talking about early on was the fluctuation of people in cities. And early on arguing that everybody's going to move out of cities because why would you live in a city anymore if you don't need to be there? You can get so much more space and enjoy yourself more in the suburbs or something like that. But that has not been a perfectly linear trend. And I think these opportunities, these huge breaks in the way we live our lives every day, give us the space to try something new. I think it's very akin to what I would have experienced with a new baby without a pandemic, right? Everything in my life has to change. And so some of that change is going to happen for the better. You know, I think it just makes the space.
Right. Right. What about you, Chelsea, or Jen? What do you think? Do you feel like you've gotten more in touch with your authentic self?
In some ways, yes. I think getting back to reading has been really important, and figuring out some of my values and priorities and trying to direct my time and energy and effort towards those things. So doing the things in my job that I love and maintaining some of those student relationships, continuing to do the mentoring, even if it is remote, all of those things that do fulfill me. But finding things that fulfill me rather than just fill my time, I guess. So trying not to watch as many TV shows I'm not really interested in, and especially trying not to watch TV and scroll on my phone at the same time. And we were talking about playing phone games, all of those kinds of things that are really just empty ways of feeling like I need to fill the time rather than doing something that I enjoy and that gives me something in return.
Right. Right. What about you, Jen?
Yeah. I think I've been doing things that there's not really people around to judge. So I can do, like, I've been doing like some art things, and granted, my husband is very judgmental, but I let my neighbor know and she gave him a talking to. yeah. So I think there's just been like more freedom for basically whatever you want to do, whatever aligns with your authentic self.
I feel like we talked about that a couple times last season, about picking up new hobbies and kind of looking at those things. What do you think, Zach?
I totally agree. I would say that every time I tried to deadlift naked in a public gym, it was no good. But when I do it here, nobody says anything.
All right. Okay. So with that, I think we will go ahead and take a quick break. And then when we come back, Chelsea is going to help us figure out how we can change some of these behaviors that we maybe don't like. All right. So we'll be back in just a moment. Okay. Okay, and so we're back. So we've been talking about pandemic habits. And so Chelsea, our social psychology professor extraordinaire, is going to talk to us about a behavioral change. So Chelsea, I got bad pandemic habits. What should I do?
Good question, Michelle. So as a social psychologist, I study alcohol use behavior in college students, and part of my research program is brief interventions to motivate behavior change. So using a harm reduction approach of how can we get college students to drink more moderately and have less alcohol-related problems. So I know a little bit about behavior change from my research. In doing some other research looking at behaviors more broadly, I found that there's several different strategies that we can use to try to modify our own behaviors. Some of them are setting goals, in particular setting SMART goals, S-M-A-R-T. It's a lovely mnemonic device that reminds us about the type of goals that we want to cultivate. These are specific goals, so not just I want to be healthier or I want to be more active, but more action-oriented specific goals. I want to increase my physical activity each week. We want them to be measurable, so SM, measurable, in that it's not just, okay, I'm increasing my physical activity, but I want to strive for the 150 minutes of physical activity each week recommended by scientists, 5 30-minute sessions. Measurable goal, you can know whether or not you met this goal and how much further you have before you make this goal. SMA is attainable, so is this something that is reasonable or realistic for me to do?
Sorry, I just want to jump in there. I use the SMART goals as well in my research. And the attainable piece, I think, is something that escapes us when we start thinking about what's attainable, but is actually something we should focus on a lot. Because it's not just what is attainable in our whole life. It's not just what is theoretically attainable, what is actually attainable. Like, thinking this through, if you say you're going to do 5 30-minute sessions of physical activity per week, actually planning out in your day, when is that 30 minutes going to happen, right? It's not just, oh, I'm going to do it sometime, but like, when honestly can you really do that? And seeing if it's attainable in that way, that sense of it being realistic, I think is super important. At least when I was working with the goals in my research, that was one of the things that tripped up my participants a lot, was what attainable actually looks like.
And attainable is hard because it's based on your perception. And so your perception of what's attainable might be very small if you're kind of coming at it from a very pessimistic sort of, I'm not sure that I have the resources to maintain this, or a very pie in the sky, I think I can move mountains without building up the strength to be able to move those mountains in the long run. And both of those can really trip us up, in that we either set goals that are too easy and we don't make the progress that we ideally want, or we make it so difficult for ourselves and don't map out exactly how we would get to our eventual goal that we lose motivation. So attainable, very important, but also something that is our perception. And so keeping those things in mind about what really is reasonable for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so maybe if you don't make that the first round, be flexible and compassionate with yourself about what attainable actually means. All right, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. I did mean to interrupt, but hopefully it was useful. So SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable. What's next?
R for relevant goals. And so this is getting back into our authentic selves and our values, our priorities. If our goals are in line with what we truly want and what we think is very important and what we want to devote our time and resources towards, we're a lot more likely to work towards achieving those. They fit with our identity, our vision of ourself, and where we hope to be going in life. So if you think of yourself as a healthy person, it might be easier for you to make this goal that is very relevant to your health. SMART, the last one, timely. So creating timelines for measuring your progress towards your goals and having regular check-ins with yourself or with others to see what steps you're taking and if you're ultimately getting where you want to be, or if you're encountering some barriers along the way and helping to figure out how you can address that. So those are our SMART goals.
Something that I do in my work is PDSA cycles. So, which is really just you try something and if it doesn't work, you reevaluate it. So with your SMART goals, for instance, if you say that I'm going to wake up at 6 a.m. and do yoga 3 times a week, I've set that goal for myself, but I'm not a morning person. I'm not actually going to get out of bed. So after I didn't meet that goal that I set for myself at the end of the week, I can take the time to reflect and reevaluate like, okay, maybe 6 a.m. yoga isn't what's going to work for me. Let's try that again next week at a different time. And I will probably do the yoga at 6 p.m.
Yes, I definitely think fitting the behaviors into what you already do is going to be much more successful than just trying something that's outside of your sense of self. I mean, it really goes back to what Chelsea was saying about the relevant. This is my, in line with my values, my self-image, but also maybe in my, the way that I run my life, you know, the way my usual habits and everything.
So if you don't make it your first time, you can reevaluate and decide what changes you want to make so that you can fit whatever goal that you want to achieve in your routine.
Right, absolutely. So you set the SMART goal, you try it. If it doesn't work, then you figure out what parameters you need to tweak and do it again, but with, you know, patience and compassion for yourself. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point. All right, Chelsea, so we've set our SMART goals. We've got this figured out. What do we do next?
It's helpful to engage in self-monitoring behaviors, whether that's creating a log of your activity or having check-in discussions with other people or your own self-reflections. Like Jen was mentioning, 6 a.m. yoga wasn't working for her. She wasn't meeting that goal. So monitoring your progress that way to see how far you've come along the way to increase and sustain that motivation. And also help to identify some of the barriers or issues along the way, which brings us to another component, problem solve barriers that get in the way of your success. So figuring out that 6 a.m. yoga is not good for you, figuring out that 5 days a week is a lot, what if I condense it into 3, changing up your goals to meet your lifestyle and your needs at the same time. I struggled with this during the pandemic because so much of my daily life was walking around campus, walking around the lecture hall. I got so many steps without trying. And sitting in front of my computer all day, I get 0 steps. I lived in an apartment in the city of Philadelphia. I did not have a lot of space. I was trying to figure out how can I get my steps in? How can I do physical activity? Especially in the winter months when it's just not possible to go outside. It gets very cold and icky. So coming up with a plan. Part of that plan was I'm going to talk to people on the phone and walk around my apartment. It's small, but it's a way of getting in steps. I also use time to walk my dogs and get my steps in that way, even in the weather that was not so great because they have to go outside. And I also bought a treadmill. So I was fortunate enough to be able to do that as a way of making sure that I was on track with getting my steps in. So figuring out ways to remove the barriers to physical activity and make it easier for me to actually engage in that habit that I value.
I feel like that has some compassion, self-compassion involved in there as well, in that you identify the barrier as being exactly what it is. It's a barrier. It's not some condemnation of yourself that you can't manage to do this as much as it is just a problem to be solved.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's really helpful to bring in outside perspectives as well, because I can fall into the trap I know personally of, I just can't do it. I just can't make this happen. And instead, if I talk to someone else, they can help me identify, okay, these are the barriers. If I take that away, how would that help you? Maybe try this. So coming in with a creative, fresh perspective and not being personally tied to the outcome can be helpful too.
I've definitely found that sharing these goals with people or your progress with people or just discussions, problem solving with other people has helped a lot in any kind of goals that I'm trying to attain. Or, I mean, we talked about social support a lot last season, but just having these people around for support and, like you said, an outside perspective and helping us problem solve is really invaluable.
Definitely. And that's why another sort of prong related to this is accountability. So beyond the self-logs and the self-accountability, having a group of people with like-minded goals who can provide that social support for you and check in with you and say, I notice that you aren't making the progress here. I notice that you seem to be struggling in this area. Can we talk about it? And that is hugely helpful. So Michelle and I have done the Run the Edge, Run the Year program for 4 years now,
four or five years.
And the program generally, you get a team. We have four or five people, I think five this year. And we split up 2,021 miles amongst all five of us. And so all of us are working towards this overarching goal of running or walking the number of the year in miles. And so if someone's not doing their part, that's a time at which we might say, okay, so I see that you haven't entered any steps this week. I see that you haven't done a run. What's going on? Are you okay? How can I help support you? How can I be your cheerleader? Whatever you need.
Importantly, not in a shaming way, but in a supportive way.
In a supportive way, in a non-judgmental way as well.
So another thing, Chelsea, that you might be able to speak to, my brother was just recently visiting and he talked about what he called temptation bundling that I think he had actually listened to on another podcast, which was pairing the behavior that you want to increase with something else that you also want to do. So is that something that is on your behavioral change list?
Yes, absolutely. So I have used that technique myself with trying to increase my engagement with getting my steps in on the treadmill. So when I'm on the treadmill, I pair that with a show that I really want to watch, and that motivates me. Oh, I want to find out what happens next. I guess I've got to get my steps in. I've got to get on the treadmill today. Has anyone else used that technique?
I definitely have. There's been a season of a TV show that I would only watch on my iPad when I was at the gym on the treadmill. I did use headphones. I wasn't being obnoxious, but and I would do like way more than my scheduled workout just because I had to see what was happening next on the TV show. So definitely that works for me.
I do that with audiobooks on long walks, and I'll find myself going extra blocks to see what happens in that chapter.
What about you, Zach? Or is the exercise enough of a temptation? You don't need to bundle it.
Maybe this is worth speaking to more broadly. I don't find temptation bundling super useful to me. I think it requires, if you can build in the environmental rigor that you can't abandon that bundling, then it can be really useful. But for me, I feel like I often have to exert an extra layer of self-control to maintain that bundling. Mm-hmm. And so it hasn't been a super successful strategy for me, which is not to say that it wouldn't be for anybody else. Obviously, for 3/4 of the podcast, it is. but maybe that's to say that when you're trying on these strategies, try a bunch of them because some of them won't work and that's okay.
Absolutely. I think that's an incredibly important perspective, is that all of these things we're talking about are things that have worked, and even SMART goals have worked in varying success with me. Sometimes it works a lot better than others. So all of these strategies are things that are going to work for some people and not for others. And they might work at some times for some people and not other times for other people. And so, yeah, definitely they're tools to use, but they're not just a blanket solution for anybody. So, yeah, I think that's a really good perspective there, Zach.
Definitely. My last that I have is if-then contingencies. So similar to the temptation bundling idea, if I finish this task from work, then I can relax and enjoy this show. Or if I get my treadmill time in, then I can read my book for an hour if I want, something along those lines. Rewarding yourself for making progress.
So yeah, I think that is a really good tool too, this if-then contingency, set up this kind of plan going forward so that you can kind of trip the reward by completing the behavior. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's go ahead and take another break real fast. And then when we come back, I want to get any advice you have for the listeners on how we can change our pandemic habits. All right, so we'll be right back in just a moment. All All right. And so we're back. So as we finish up, I just want to ask everybody, do you have any final pieces of advice for everyone when they're looking at these habits that they want to change going forward? What would you tell them? Jen, let's start with you.
I would say don't change a habit just because you think you should change it. So if something works for you, do it. Just if all your friends are starting to run marathons and you hate running, you don't have to run a marathon. Do what brings you joy.
I like
that. Resist normative influence.
There you go. In social psychology speak, right? But yeah, no, I like that a lot. Maybe cooking new things or trying new dessert places in and of itself isn't bad. If you can incorporate that into a healthy lifestyle, maybe you don't have to give that up. You don't have to change it just because it's new or whatever. Yeah, good advice. What about you, Zach?
I think one of the things I would throw in there is try to think about why you're pursuing the goal. So, you know, some of the if-then contingencies can be really helpful in the moment for making sure you carry through with that behavior that you care about. But maybe keep in mind that you're not just doing it for that piece of candy or to get to listen to that podcast. And at some point, it's possible you might come to enjoy the behavior for itself. I mean, a big part of why I started with the gym was because I wanted to be stronger and I wanted to look better naked. But like now it's just fun. It's an exciting thing that I look forward to each day.
Nice. I like that. I think that's important. All right. What about you, Chelsea?
I think it's key to keep in mind that you should be patient with yourself, that these habits don't form overnight. So they're not going to change overnight either. Progress is not linear. Change is not linear. You're going to have some setbacks and that's okay. And so not falling prey to the abstinence violation effect, which is this all or none sort of thinking of, oh, I missed a day at the gym, so now I just no longer am a gym person. And instead thinking, I make mistakes, I didn't hit my goal, that's okay. How can I work to continue this progress moving forward?
I like that. I think my advice, honestly, is just restating everything you three just said in a different way. But I'm kind of called back to when I was first thinking about this podcast and naming it Inside the Chrysalis. And the thing about when you have this caterpillar that builds the chrysalis around itself to become a butterfly, right? Part of that whole process is you build the chrysalis and then inside the caterpillar literally like breaks itself down to its basic pieces, its basic enzymes. It just becomes this puddle of goo and then builds itself back up into this butterfly. And that is certainly not the biological way of saying it all, but it, in concept, right? And I feel like that was my whole point of this podcast, was this thought of transforming ourselves. And I feel like what you all are saying is this sense of how to build these habits into the person that you really are, and finding that sense of authenticity. These habits that you've picked up, it could be something that it could be a good habit, like we were talking about, like reading or speaking with friends or exercising, that you've gotten back in touch with yourself. Or it could be, like Jen was saying, something that you kind of think of as a bad habit of trying desserts, but really what you've opened up is this new appreciation for new foods or spending time, even just the time with your person, finding those desserts and enjoying those desserts together, or anything. There's a reason you engaged in those habits. So examining those reasons and finding out why you're doing that and what need you have that needs to be fed. Or is it like Chelsea was talking about earlier, that you're playing a phone game to fill time? You know, what can you do instead to fill that time? But I guess the whole point of what I'm saying is be intentional about what habits you're looking at and what you want to change and why you want to change it, and make sure that you are going on this journey or engaging in this process of becoming that person. And as we've been sitting in our chrysalis of a pandemic, transforming into goo, maybe as we are putting ourselves back together on this other side of it, we can be a little bit closer to the form we wanted to be in the beginning. Hopefully that made sense. It did in my head. Okay, so thank you everybody for being here. Panel, thank you for talking about this with me today. And listeners, thanks for joining us. Please connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. We would love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at Inside the Chrysalis Podcast or on Instagram at Inside the Chrysalis. Our podcast today was edited by Travis Woodley and produced by Travis and myself. And just so you know, all of the views we expressed on the podcast today are ours alone and are not representative of our respective organizations. So if you don't like something we said, we have to take the heat all by ourselves. And in addition to that, we are researchers, not counselors, so please don't take our advice in any kind of diagnostic capacity. And if you really enjoyed the content and want access to more, visit our Inside the Chrysalis page on Patreon and become one of our supporters, which will help us cover our production costs. So until then, we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.